Thomas and Kevin. Morrer youth, Brussels youth, normal flight plane, A330, like a hummingbird. Incredible. Yes, your youth, no, y'all see. Any dog chasing the air tongue, I don't know your youth, you ain't me training one. They fly the this big bird like unbelievable. Yet I must say, this is what we got to be doing. 2024 and beyond, your youth, no, so it's what we need to be papa. Now you guys are dog chasing the air. Yeah, friends, hey, that I'm saying now you too. Signing out. We gotta fly. Take care.
The pain and suffering are a mere word. Any words will call a boo.
No.
It to me flood. It to me flood. Neni pad demo yare of kwa. Ah, eh yao. Ghana for mommy and 5 January 2024. I promise you with my life, I say. Mema gane die. I promise you. Mema youth na amma won homene so. Na gane die. Yeri nya 130 ministers. Yibi nya 20 ministers.
So people who are challenged. People, women. We're going to encourage them. We're going to develop them. Because of our culture, most of the women have been played in the back roles. We're going to bring them to the forefront of everything we're going to do and empower them and help them. Have institutions that are going to focus on human women development. Because to have a woman actually in politics is women are community-based thinkers.
Ibrahim Mustafa is a highly sought-after figure in the world of public speaking, with over 30 books and years of experience as a coach, keynote speaker, and author. He has established a reputation for delivering dynamic and engaging presentations. This, combined with his work with prestigious organizations such as Astana Expo, World Economic Forum, and Google, has earned him a place among the most respected names in the industry. However, Ibrahim's impact extends far beyond the world of public speaking. He is also a philanthropist at heart, actively supporting numerous charitable projects and working tirelessly to make a positive impact in the world. Whether you're looking for an inspiring keynote speaker, a skilled public speaking coach, or an expert in the firm, Ibrahim Mustafa is the perfect choice. Don't miss the opportunity to book him for your next event and discover the difference for yourself. With his expertise and passion for public speaking, Ibrahim is sure to make a lasting impact on your audience and make you a great speaker.
Welcome to the I Am Talk Tax. My name is Ibrahim Mustafa and I am your host. And I believe that you know that the aim of this is to inspire you, to let you know that you are not alone. If you want to start a business, if you want to even go into leadership, if you want to start any project and you believe sometimes you are afraid, this is the time for you to learn from the best in the industry. People who are pushing beyond boundaries and making sure that they give you and share their experience with you to help you do what you are supposed to do. Today, we have a great personality here. And I say, he's a dynamic entrepreneur and advocate who is passionate about empowering people. He's not your typical politician, but a visionary running as an independent candidate for the 2024 presidential election in Ghana. Disturbed by the corruption in government, Kofi is determined to bring in change. His campaign, Agenda 2024, is a blueprint for a new Ghana. Invested in his people's aspirations as a husband, father, and entrepreneur, Kofi is ready to lead Ghana into a future that includes all Ghanaians. Today, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome on stage and to the show, the man, the visionary, Kofi Quarantin. Welcome, brother.
Oh, Ibrahim, I am so proud of you. Ibrahim, I am jealous of you. Let me just, I'm going to be, full disclosure, I am so jealous of you because, Ibrahim, this is what I wanted to do.
Wow.
You know, what you are doing now is my passion, true passion. I wanted to be a speaker. I wanted to be to inspire people in leadership. And I started training many decades ago in doing wow. this. I did the trainer with so many leaders in the field that you're in. Wow. And to see you just grow to be the type of person you are, I am so proud of you just looking at the videos that played in the back before we getting started. So congratulations, man.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity also. A lot of young people are looking up to you. When you go around the whole of Ghana and you propose, ask questions, you realize that, yes, people are pointing fingers that this person can be a good leader. And that is why today I'm privileged and honored to have you here on my show, so that maybe you can better lay the vision to young people. So sometimes the questions we are supposed to ask leaders, we don't get opportunities, don't we? We don't. So we are happy that you are here, willing to listen. And I think that if all the leaders that we have, political leaders, quote unquote, give us the free opportunity to listen to them, I think we'll be getting a step ahead. So welcome to the show, and maybe you can say one or two things about you and also tie it down to why you think that at this moment is the time for you to lead Ghana.
Thank you so much, Ibrahim. My name is Kofi Kranting. I'm running for president 2024 in Ghana. Now, just a little background. I was born in Ghana, Kolobu Teaching Hospital. Went to school at Agri Memorial International, right next to the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation. My father was a police officer, so I had to, you know, he went on multiple transfers. So we went to Cape Coast, where I went to school at University Primary. Went to Kumasi. I went to Garrison Primary. Sat common entrance there. Came to Addis Idol College. Went to Addis Idol College for a couple of years, 4 years, and then left for London. Studied engineering at London Enfield College, and then came to New York, where I pursued a degree in marketing and business and economics at New York University. And in all of that, I did some advocacy work, you know, fighting and representing Ghanaians in matters concerning their lifestyles. And that's what brought me to representing and fighting, bringing the Electoral Commissioner to court over why Ghanaians abroad could not vote in from where they live, from their domiciles abroad in the Ghana election, because the Ghanaians abroad brought home over $6 billion a year. Without the Ghanaians living abroad, without their remittances coming into Ghana, the economy of Ghana would have collapsed. Yeah. So to have this amount of money coming in and not allowing them to vote was, I think, was miscarriage of human rights. So right. We fought for that. We won the case in the High Court that pushed the Electoral Commission to implement Representation of the People's Amendment Act. But to this day, governments come, governments go. NDC came in, promised us. MPP came in, promised. No one has been able to implement ROPA because they fear the effect that the diaspora would have on the Ghana elections. Yeah. And we wallow in darkness still. So this is where we are, and this is why I had to jump in, hold the bull by the horns myself, and run for president. Because if they're not going to allow us to change, if the mountain will not come to Mohammed, I guess.
Yes.
Mohammed would have to go to the mountain. So that's what we're doing.
Great, great. And the next question has to do with, I just want us to go straight to the policies, and because this is what we want. This is what we want to know. What are some of the policies in terms of like agriculture? because I've overheard you in other platforms talking about your agricultural policies and how you can change the narrative.
All right. So really quickly, listen, Ibrahim, we are about 104% debt to GDP. In plain English, that means we are spending 4% more than we are bringing in. It's 104%. So we are making less than we are spending. And even that which we are making is not really real money because it's actually borrowed money. So the proposal with our administration is rather than get involved in projects that not essential, like building e-blocks like Muhammad did, like building interchanges like the Akufo-Addo government is doing and building the National Cathedral, we need to inject all that money that we have gotten into agriculture. Agriculture is our main vein policy. And the reason why we need to do that is because output from agriculture, we need to give to our first level, first tier industries so that we can add value and export. We can consume as much as we can, and the surplus add value and export so we could get foreign exchange reserves. When we get the foreign exchange reserves, what we do is we'll have to pay down the debt because we have so much debt in excess of 600 billion cedis and it's piling on every day. So not unless we pay down the debt and it gets to a point where it's uncontrollable, then the people who have what we call the first rights to our debt will come and call in the debt saying that we have realized that you can't pay your debt. So we're going to have to come and take over your country and run it to make sure we get back our money. So that would mean China coming in because we owe China more than any other country. We don't want that to happen because if that happens, it means we're going back to being slaves again. So the first we need to do is once we get foreign exchange reserves, we need to pay down the debt to manageable levels and then invest in more what we call horizontal integration, where we will now take 99% of our domestic market is absorbed by China and other countries. We have to reverse that. By reversing that, we do two things. The Ghanaian cedi, which is spending, it's being spent as purchasing power to consume goods from outside, now will be buying goods from Ghana. So that way it slows down inflationary rates with how we are spending money and the worth of our cedi, because we're spending it on our soil. And by that doing, because we're spending the money internally in-house, it will absorb the unemployment, high levels of unemployment. People will start making money. Once they make money, they will recycle the money. There will be more incidents of them spending the money, and that will generate what we call a combustion, economic combustion. And that is what is going to absorb, suck up the debt. If we don't do that, you cannot borrow money to pay off debt. You can't do that because the borrowed money is what has brought us here in the first place. So we need to quickly go into agriculture where we're doing the domestic market, producing things at the domestic level, and then go into more sophisticated things at the second level, which is doing household goods, basic computers, phones, electronics, and then go to more sophisticated things at a third level. Wow. So that's the process we need to take. We cannot continue to import things that we can manufacture home because it's killing our city. It's making our city worthless every day, and it's causing inflation to go up. And what makes it worse is we don't even have any control because we're not the producers of these consumable goods. So that's why we have to do it. We absolutely have no government is going to be able to sustain Ghana without investing heavily into agriculture. It's a myth. Everybody who comes and talks about they want to build this, they don't know what they're talking about because it's a mathematical problem.
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
Wow. Great roadmap for agriculture. And where I'm coming from, the northern parts, I think there's a lot of potential in terms of lands and all those stuff. But the next question, just to tie it up with agriculture, is that we saw the manifesto and some of the promise by the current government in terms of the dump, one district, one dump. Do you think it will have gone a long way to help? And what has accounted for is, like, because it's like at the end of the day, we don't see the progress of it. So as you are aspiring to become the president of Ghana, and couple of the fact that our rainfall pattern is not consistent, how do we integrate or how do we make sure that we get the limelight, we get the, like, in terms of farming, if it is farming all year round or making sure that farmers don't lose their crops when they put them in the soil?
All right. So that's a very simple problem, okay? Rainfalls are inconsistent and sporadic, but we get flooding.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the fact that we get flooding means that we have excess water. But now we don't have ways of preserving the excess water. That's why recently we had flooding in the Volta, where the floodgates were open and it drowned people and livestock and assets in the Volta. So what we will do is we will build reservoirs in all the regions where there is excess rainfall. And the reservoirs will contain water. We'll build as many as we need to. Like on the path of the Volta, we can put 10 to 15 reservoirs. So there will never be a day where there will be a flood, so to speak, in Ghana, because all the water will be contained. And then we will add pumps at the ends of the... So what we do is, on the path of the Volta, as rain goes in and water collects from the top coming from Burkina, the water levels, it goes up most times and it goes down. Anytime it goes up, the excess water will be contained in a reservoir. And on the path of the Volta, we would have the reservoirs. And what happens is you have the reservoir. So you have reservoir 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, let's say to 10. So at the back of the reservoir, there are pumps. We'll put maybe a pump or two pumps. These pumps are about 28, 30 ton pumps. And what it does is, and there are gates. So it holds the water there.
Okay.
There. And what it does is, once, and we do lines are like pipelines to the agricultural areas. So we could run these lines like they run pipelines all the way from Alaska to the US. It's 10 times the length. So running a pipeline from the top of the Volta, which is in the north anyway, we have the first reservoir, to all the farming communities in the Volta is very doable. It doesn't cost a lot of money. So everywhere that is considered a farm area, we will have reservoirs, standby reservoirs.
Wow. So this is just like something, as we speak, and I see light in that. It's something that we should be doing, but we don't do it. So what is it? Is it lack of common sense? Is it that we don't want to invest? Or we, like some of the things you say, we are afraid to take risk?
Well, this is not even taking risk. This is not, you know, the governments of NDC and MPP have been blamed for being incompetent. This does not even qualify to be a matter of competence. This is a matter of common sense, okay? They don't have the mental capacity to sit and think through processes. Simple, common process. This is a life and death issue. If you don't have food security, you have a problem. And we don't have food security. We have arable lands that we can grow maybe 1,000 times the amount of food that we need, but we don't have food security. It's ridiculous. If you compare us to a nation like Netherlands, which makes about almost $110 billion from agriculture produce, we have better lands, we have a bigger land, but we import onions from the Scandinavian countries. It's ridiculous, you see? So it's just getting the right leadership who knows how to think. Thinking, it's a discipline that requires skill. You, just because you have brains doesn't mean you are thinking right. A lot of our leaders have brains, but it's really flawed, warped thinking, as I call it.
Great.
And that's why we coming in with this plan, which many countries have done and been incredibly successful at farming. Even the UAE, which is known to be desert land, are harvesting wheat and other vegetables in commercial quantities now, and they don't have water, but they have the sea, and they have desalination plants that converts the water, salt water, to regular water so they can use for the plants. We have sea, but we have water in abundance that it floods us. And our leaders sit and watch and complain about the floods every day, and it's a menace. How can that be? They don't have the mental capacity, Ibrahim.
Wow. Great. So we're still logged up. We're still live. So you can monitor this live on LinkedIn. You can watch this live on YouTube, Facebook. You can also watch this live on TikTok and also on all the podcast platforms. Talk about Google Podcast, talk about Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, Spotify, and all the platforms, including my own radio, I Am Radio, where you can monitor this and get this, watch this. Or also, if you are having difficulty, just type on Google, I Am Talkcast, and you put in Kofi Quarantine, you should be able to see this. I believe in you, I believe in Ghana, and we believe in Ghana. Let's talk about healthcare, because healthcare and education, sometimes people will not appreciate what you say, because maybe they are just sitting at the heart of Accra. They've not even moved an inch. From Accra, when you even move to a place like Bato, towards Ho, towards like, you will see that there are actually things to talk about. Even in Accra, Kolebu, where you go, in one of your videos, you were talking about how Kolebu gets flooded. So what is the plan for healthcare and tide of education?
All right. So the first thing I would say is let your food be your medicine and your medicine be your food. Yeah. Most of the things that we import into Ghana are poisons for our bodies. And we have a Ministry of Health who is not looking and paying attention. We have Food and Drug Authority who is not looking and paying attention. So what happens is people eat, get sick, and then we have the most ridiculous healthcare system that's not functional. So then people die. You see, one of the biggest things haunting us right now is the onset of metabolic syndrome, which is responsible for strokes, high blood pressure, diabetes, hyperinsulinemia, all those things, that whole spectrum of things. Why is that the case? Because we eat all the wrong things. And then we exacerbate it with bad alcohol from methanol, which is like adding fire to adding jet fuel to fire. You know, methanol is a bad base for the alcohol that we drink in Ghana. It should be ethanol, which is a superior base for the alcohol. But methanol is cheaper. It's readily made, very easily made as a chemical, as a commercial substance and solution. And they use it for alcohol, and people get drunk on it and they get sick. That's why we have so many young children, young men and women on dialysis at Kolebu, where we have just a handful of machines. So people die. Okay, so a healthcare system, we live in a country where we can eat organic everything. So why do we need to import packaged foods that are packed with poisons? That's something you need to ask your healthcare, Ministry of Health. But if I'm president today, none of these foods are going to find its way in. We're going to develop our foods so that it's nutritious, it's mineralized, it's fresh off the shelf, and we won't have any of these poisons come in. So that's the first thing. And then, as far as the healthcare professionals are concerned, we're going to train them so they are incredibly skilled. And we're going to have facilities for them to be functional in, which means we're going to have world-class healthcare centers. We're going to have every human being, every citizen of Ghana assigned to a healthcare center where they're getting their checks. Their children and elderly are going to have their routine checks where they're going to be called. If they have a cell phone, there'll be notices going to their cell phone to go get their checkups. And for elderly people who may not be on top of their stuff, they're going to wear watches that's going to remind them and track them. So wherever they are in the country, their healthcare center that they are assigned to could track how they're doing and reach out to them if their levels are falling below standardized levels. So these are some of the things that we're going to do. But when you tie it in with the education, we're going to, part of this, the whole curriculum of our education system is going to be about elevating people's consciousness to understanding the things that we need to do to have a better life. So the eating is going to be incredibly, we're going to educate people on the right things to eat, how to mineralize your body, the things you need to do to have a full-fledged lifestyle. And it's going to go into curriculums, billboards, even television programs, and we're going to have time slots on peak television programs where there's going to be about educating the masses about maybe how to take care of themselves, and not maybe talk about all this useless things that we have on television for the sake of money. So our environment is going to be very, I don't want to say controlled, but it's going to be supervised to make sure that the right things are getting to the people to elevate their lives.
Great. Great. And I love that. Then let's look at this. There's been much talk on what is happening in our economy. Now, some are saying they want to go for 24-hour economy, and some are focusing on digitalization. What is it that you will do better than the two? Or what? Where do you see yourself like coming in?
Well, it's one of the most ridiculous statements for a president to make that they're going to create a 24-hour economy, because a couple of things. Ibrahim, to even think about a 24-hour economy, you have to first have three things. You have to have connectivity. Yeah. Okay, you have to have competency, and then you have to have competency, connectivity. And my mind doesn't come to it now, but complexity is the third thing I'm thinking about. Okay, so complexity, connectivity, and competency. So when you talk about connectivity, the first thing is you need to have what we call telecommunications. When you talk about telecommunications, you need transportation, telecommunication, you need data, okay? Yeah. Availability of data. You know how expensive data is in Ghana. Yeah. You need to have a fast-speed internet so that people can transact as quickly as possible. And then you need to have cellular availability. Okay, cellular availability is not cheap in Ghana. That's as far as the telecommunication is concerned. Then you come to transportation. Transportation, you need to have mass transit system. So you need what we call subways, a train system, maybe a subway, or maybe trams. And then you need to have boats moving people on water. And then you have to have bus systems. These are all examples of the mass transit system to move people from one place to the other. And that allows for them to transact business and be engaged in the processes of doing commerce. Okay, so when it comes to connectivity, that is the key point. And this is what the Chinese established first, that they understood that to even build an economy, you need to first establish transportation. And that's why their network is one of the best in the world, because without transportation, you cannot establish an economy that's effective. So we got the transportation out, the connectivity out. Then you need complexity. Complexity is knowing how to do something well to a very high degree. Because once you know how to do something well to a very high degree, what happens is it spans off other things. So yeah. When you know how to do or build a computer very well, then you can do other things that depends on formation of a computer. So computer integrated processes are easy for you, because now you're able to build a laptop, then you can build supercomputers to control maybe robots in an assembly line to do more sophisticated things. So that's competency. And then right. You need what we call complexity. That's what we talked about, complexity. And you need competency, which is just knowing how to do something, which in Ghana, most of us and the companies and the agencies that we have don't run well. So if you don't have these three things, it's almost impossible for you to come up and say you want to establish a 24-hour economy. You cannot right. go into somebody's home and say, I need you to get involved in a 24-hour economy. But what you do is you, as a government, you make resources and infrastructure available. Okay. Right. And then the one other thing is you make funding, competitive funding, also available. Because one of the reasons why a lot of people can't get into starting a business is because they don't have the money. Money is very expensive in Ghana. If you have to right. borrow money from a bank or an institution, you're paying 29-30% sometimes. How yeah. can you even have an edge to make money when you're paying 20s as far as interest rate? It's impossible to make any money. So the government has to make sure that there is funding available for startups. If you don't have funding available, people will have great ideas, but they won't be able to start. Now, another key thing that I want to bring about, if Mahama, who says he wants to build a 24-hour economy, were to start a 24-hour economy, let's just say, and he was able to make $1 billion of income into the 24-hour economy, everybody will hail him as a hero, a savior. Right or right, Ibrahim? I mean, yes. If $1 billion. But Ibrahim, isn't it sad to acknowledge that we lose $3 to $4 billion a year in corruption, according to the Accountant General, $3 to $4 billion. So now my question and what I am proposing is this: wouldn't it be better for a president who is thinking about a 24-hour economy to first think about eradicating corruption, which is responsible for $3 to $4 billion a year, than to think about just leaving that alone and going to establish a 24-hour economy? Because Ibrahim, the truth of the matter is if you do not take care of corruption by establishing a 24-hour economy, you have just given rise to a 24-hour corruption.
Yeah.
So we need to take care of that problem that is staring us in the face every day, which is the corruption. I'm sure you heard just the last couple of days that the Accountant General come out that in 2021, the ministries, some ministries and some businesses accounted for 170 billion CDs of technicalities that is all wasted. 170 yeah. billion CDs. You heard that, right?
Yes.
So if me as a president, my goal is not to create a 24-hour economy. My goal is to rid the country of corruption.
Yeah.
And change the constitution and institute a national development plan. Things that will make what we are doing now tight, so that when we get the concept of doing things right, 24-hour economy will come as a default. Do you see what I'm saying? You don't plan a 24-hour economy. You set things to hum in the economy, and then the economy will give birth to a 24-hour economy. But you don't go out to plan a 24-hour economy. And this is our difference of consciousness in how we handle it. Meanwhile, we are planning on a 6-hour economy. And the reason why we are planning on a 6-hour economy, Ibrahim, is that because of the innovation of artificial intelligence, cellular intelligence, augmented reality, virtual reality, it makes processes tighter. If processes are tighter and more efficient and more effective and functional, then it means you can use less to get more.
Right.
So I want Ghanaians to work less and live more. That's why I am instituting, I am proposing, I will bring about a 6-hour economy, not a 24-hour economy, because we need to live more and work less.
We need to live more and work less. So if you are watching, unfortunately, if you are listening to this on IM Radio or any of the podcast platforms, you may not be able to see this, but we have his website and Kofi Corantin, and you will get to see all the policies that he's proposing. He's not just talking, but he has done the work, and he has even given, I think this is free resource for Ghana, because he has put in all the things that he wants to do, his vision, what he wants, the plan, how to give young people operational policies, opportunities for young people, and all the things that he wants to do. He has already put in them in the space of the internet, whereby you can just go and access them and see what he is talking about, whether artificial intelligence, renewable energy. And you can also get opportunity to be part of this vision by donating and joining the team, because it needs resources to be able to salvage the economy and save the economy from the people who may be trying to damage it. And it's all about young people. Where do you go to? What do you have? It's Ghana that we have. If we don't save Ghana, no one can save Ghana. It's you, your vote, and also your power in terms of supporting, because it needs resources, it needs support, it needs encouragement to be able to salvage ourselves from this type of leadership we are seeing. But I'm not here to judge and tell you that vote for this person or that person. But if the economy is good for you, you can keep on voting for who you want. But if it is no good and you see that your children will not have a vision, it's time to make a difference. I believe in you. And welcome back again. This is I Am Podcast, and this is kindly supported by I Am Store. And with this Christmas, don't go there and deceive your kids and say, rich uncle, rich auntie. And once they are coming, you dodge them, you buy them toffee. No, buy them something that they can write on and be innovative and draw. And you also have Magas Homes and Luxury Apartments. They've been supporting us from day one. They've been keeping us down, and they are making this possible. So get them if you want to build, if you want to buy a house, just get them and they will be able to do that. So let's come back to the studio and listen to the visions, the ideas, the policies to make Ghana work again. You touch on corruption a little in your submission about the 24-hour economy. I can also tell you for one or two reasons. Sometimes I get annoyed when I go to the airport and I'm coming from the airport. Maybe when I travel from any part of the country and the world and I come to the airport, the taxi drivers, they charge me higher. And one day I complain. I said, why? I know where I'm going. They said, oh, this parking space is not for government. It's been sold to a Nigerian man. Excuse me, to the literally the guy said, oh, it's not, it's for a Nigerian man. And he brings his policies. So he charges them for even parking. That's maybe 10 cities or more. So, and it gives me the idea that maybe we are not in control at the airport. Is that true?
We're not in control everywhere in Ghana. We have American bases in Ghana. They could walk into our country, come into our country without a visa, without a passport, just an ID. They could come into our country, but our soldiers cannot go to America with a full-fledged passport, and even with a visa is tough. You can't walk into any part of America as a Ghanaian soldier, but they could come into our country and walk anywhere and demand access. They could carry arms to protect themselves if they feel threatened. Our soldiers don't have the rights. The places they have access to, our soldiers don't even have the rights to. What kind of agreement is that? You know, we sold the harbor, the biggest money maker. We sold it to a French billionaire, Vincent Bellori, who is Mahama sold it to in 2015, and they're going to own it for, the deal was for him to own it for 35 years. We now sold the lithium to a company in, I believe, Australia, who don't even have the money for their exploration. But Ghana government has turned around to give them money to buy shares in a company who has not. It's sickening. And then where the, you know, the Nigerian guy who owns Ghana, who is friends to the president, owns, and now they want to even buy all the land around the airport.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's serious.
And this is the same guy who charged Ghanaians $150 per person during the COVID time and gave Ghana government $10. They charged $150, took $140 and gave Ghana government $10. So these are things that make you kind of cringe. It makes you ask yourself, who is the Ghana government really working for? Do they represent Ghana? I don't think so, because their policies are not pro-Ghana. Their policies are pro somebody else, definitely not Ghana. And that's why we need to vote them out, NDC and MPP both. And the reason why I say NDC and MPP both is for all the things that MPP gets approved, it's with the NDC in parliament with them. And for all the things that Mahama got approved, it was with the MPP in parliament with them. So they've been in parliament together. They will blame each other. Oh, you passed it. Oh, you had the majority to pass it without even our involvement. But they all get under the table deals that makes them shush, quiet when these deals are going through, and they make the money, MPP and NDC together. So we're sick and tired of them, and we need to remove them for Ghana to gain true independence and start on rebuilding a totally new Ghana all over again.
Wow. Let's talk about the debt. The debt ratio is alarming. And when I see, sometimes I see figures and I feel like, it's like, at any point in time, they can just come and tell us that move out of Ghana. You're not, we are buying Ghana, or the Ghana is not for like Ghanaians. So, how do you tackle debts to GDP ratio and the alarming interest that we pay even on our debts now?
Well, the only thing, like I said before, we're going to be able to do is to stop the hemorrhage. The hemorrhaging has been going on because we don't have any income coming in until you have real income. When I say real income, I mean organically generated income. Yeah. Income made on Ghana soil by Ghanaians. We don't have that coming in because we don't have any industries. People are not making money, so they're not spending. So how do you generate income? So it has to be a government who's focused on building wealth for its people. And the only way you're going to be able to build wealth for your people is if you have manufacturing, major manufacturing hubs, manufacturing for the people, for so that their money is spent on the goods that they themselves produce, and to have a surplus to add value to package. Ibrahim, none of our exports, we have gold, cocoa, and oil, which represents 80% of our exports. Yeah. None of these things we add value to. We just give it away on a silver platter to foreigners. Why is that? We don't add value to anything. The bauxite, we don't add value to tomatoes, to onions. Oh, I'm sorry about the tomatoes and onions. We don't even produce enough for ourselves. So I take that back. So how are we going to be able to, we consume more tomatoes than Italy. And that's why we import tomatoes from Burkina, from tomato paste from Italy. And most of the tomatoes that we get from outside of Ghana, it's been filled with soy and other ingredients that's making our people sick. And we sitting on tomatoes. We are a petrol importation nation, because the price of petrol affects pretty much everything consumer goods in Ghana. Yet we sit on petrol, but then when we drill our petrol, we give it to foreigners to go and refine, put it on a vessel and bring it back to Ghana to sell to us. The money we could have used for the for drilling the petrol, we put it in a national cathedral, because you know we promised God that we were going to build him a cathedral. You know, so God will be very upset with us and maybe end the life of all Ghanaians if we don't build him that cathedral. And then we have people in the parliament, NDC and MPP both, allow for this to go through. You see, we spent over $500 million. You are telling me that we cannot build at least 100 companies with $500 million, each costing $5 million? Of course. Of course. You know, we have, go to the north. You are from the north. Ibrahim, every seed, every grain in the north we can add value to that for that to be a major commodity in the west.
Yeah.
Food is very expensive in the west because they don't have the land. They don't have the minerals in the land. They don't have the space. We have the space. I was in Shanghai. The size of Shanghai is a little bigger than Greater Accra. And there are 27 million people who live in Shanghai. We can have basically the whole of Ghana live in Greater Accra and a little part of Eastern or Central region, and the rest of Ghana used for agriculture. We will be the world's wealthiest nation within 5 to 10 years. Why are we not doing that? Meanwhile, all our people, even graduates, are living in containers alongside the waterways where the most expensive real estates could be constructed. We don't understand the value of money. We don't understand making money. We just don't understand building wealth. The concept is foreign to us, you see, because we have these guys who call themselves leaders, who I call position holders, who do not understand how money works. And that's why they have undervalued it so much that you could sit on lithium and allow a company that literally had no money to go and borrow money from people, SpaceX, Elon Musk, go to Elon Musk, borrow money from him and say, hey, listen, we think that the Ghana geological corporation, they did an analysis in 1969 and their findings look like there's lithium in Ghana. So let's go and rehash that exploration that they did. They find lithium and then they go and borrow money from Elon Musk, bring it into Ghana, start a company. They don't have a clue what they're doing. All they know is there's lithium, so we got to dig. Just like BlackRock did with the oil in Kufuor's years, right? They come to Ghana, they start a company, and then the Ghana government sits there in amazement and say, wow, you guys did that? You are so good. I'm actually going to invest money in you. They take the money from them.
Right. Yeah.
It's painful.
So
it's painful.
It's painful, and the reality is that most people will not even appreciate what you are saying, because they don't see what other economies are doing. Sometimes I go to the desert safari in Dubai, and as we are using the cars to just go around, then I keep on standing and saying that, what is this that we can't do?
Amazing.
What is in Dubai, like Dubai, that artificially they have to do some of the things artificially? We have natural things, things that people are willing to come and see. But so sometimes they will not appreciate. And I think you have the experience. You've gone around the world, and you're not just going around the world to see, but you ask questions. Some of your videos you compare and say that we can do this, we can do that. What do you think the problem is that we have in Ghana, and how can we solve that?
Well, like I said, Ibrahim, our leaders don't have the mental capacity to think past what they eat on their table today. That's pretty much, they're very short-sighted. And you have to have a special human being in the way that they think, a visionary who thinks, sees 10 years into the future. I see 50 years into the future. And I have seen the future of Ghana, the Ghana that I seek. And that's why we have to remove these two people. They are brothers, they are friends, they are family members, but they just don't have it in them. You know, they've been to all these places. They've been to more places than I, but they don't take with them the experience. They go eat, sit, drink the most expensive wine, and come back home empty. When I travel, I make observations, and I see how we can use what we have in our jurisdiction to build bigger and better than them. And I promise you, with what we have in Ghana, like you said, Dubai has nothing. And if you look at what Sheikh Rashid Al Maktoum has been able to do with literally nothing, one person, and you take a look at 275 legislators in parliament. You have the executive office, you have the judiciary, you have all the advisors, council of elders, state count this, and they sit. And what do they come out with? Oh, well, we have a flood. Wow. We have a flood in Accra. For the last 20, 30 years, we still have the flood. The streets are filthy. The place smells. We don't have a sewer system. Even Accra doesn't have a sewer system. So, God bless all the other parts of the country. So what are we doing? Who's running the country? And then they fly around, 618 of them board a plane and go to Dubai for a COP28 conference. Really? Food, beverage, hotel, per diem, and then they come back. When you could have just watched the video for an hour and learned everything from the comfort of your living room. It's insulting.
Yeah.
It's insulting. But like I said, till we change a government that sees past what we are talking about, nothing will change. And now is the time for Ghanaians to come together and say that enough is enough. These guys are not going to be able to serve us. The governments of NDC and NPP are short-sighted. They don't have the vision, the leadership to take us into the next millennium. We need someone who could craft a new world for Ghana, where water will not be a problem, where there will be power 24/7, our streets will be clean, our children will go to school, our daughters are safe on the streets, and we will have the infrastructure to build and to multiply wealth. That's what you need. And Kofi Crunting is the person. It's just as simple as that. Not unless you have a government that can show you how they're going to be able to build 10 things. And the 10 things are housing. Housing is a problem. All these 10 things are a problem. Housing, healthcare. They're going to have employment, education. We're going to have telecommunication, transportation. We're going to have leisure, okay, and security. We're going to have markets and a functional CBD, which is a central business district. Not unless we have these 10 things, nobody is going to be able to build Ghana. So when they come and they promise you that they're going to build toilets or make Okada, legalize Okada, or they're going to do a 24-hour economy, or talk about digitization, it's gimmicks. That's things that they have read when they were singing first class. They read on a piece of paper in a magazine, and they thought, oh, this would be a good idea for me to sell to Ghana. But this time we're not buying it. Those times are over. We need common sense approach to fixing Ghana's problems, and that's what I represent.
Wow, we need common sense approach to fixing Ghana's problems. This is I Am Talkcast, and I believe that you have learned from the man himself. We are going to be doing this in different episodes, whereby sometimes we take healthcare, sometimes we take education, sometimes we take different until the end of maybe the elections. And I believe that for Ghana to be good, we must be good. And I believe that it's not about talking. Me, my perception is not about talking. But I believe that if someone says one or two things and they are practical, and you can see that this is possible, and once this is done, we can make Ghana better. And that's what our good brother is representing, because all the things he's talking about, is they are feasible things that we can easily do, just like the flooding, how to solve the flooding. And for 10 years now, consistently, every year, there will be news reports. Please, Burkina will open their dam, Bagri Dam. We don't know when, but once people should relocate, it doesn't make sense. And you heard what he said. Some practical, simple things that we can do. So we've come to the apex of this interview. It's a nice interview, but I just want you to, the audience are yours, inspire them. Let them know that there's hope. And let them know that once they put their trust in you, you will never let them down.
Well, thank you, Ibrahim. Ghana, listen to me. You have one life to live. One life. It has to be special. This is your destiny. You have to script it the way that you want. We have given our lives to people who are totally clueless in crafting it for us. And that is why we have ended up where we are now. We have one last chance in 2024 to get off this bus, turn it around, save the women and children and all the helpless people at the station who are waiting. There's a 100-ton train is coming through at 100 miles per hour, and it's lost its brakes, and it's coming through. And when it gets to the station, it's going to plow through the station and kill everybody. We have to use a helicopter, descend on this train and defuse this train so that it stops before it gets to the station. And I am the person to do that for you. If you see that in me, I want you to come along and vote for me. We don't have a chance if we continue on this path. We are going to fail. We've already seen glimpses at 104% plus of debt to GDP, of over 600 billion cedis of debt. We don't have any industry. How are we going to be able to build the wealth to create the economic combustion to absorb the $600 debt, 600 billion CD debt? We don't have a middle class. Our middle class has left the country. As we speak now, people are at Kutuka International Airport, leaving the country never to return, because they have had the most unfavorable experience, a bitter experience. Their family members have died. They have suffered. What are we going to do? We have the last chance. This is the last chance before China takes over. And I'm asking you that be brave, be bold. Call your friend, tell them about Kofi Kranting. Donate to our Momo, 059-999-5120. 059-999-5120. Donate to our Momo. Go on KofiKranting.com. Find out about us. Donate. Because if we don't do this, we are asking everybody in the diaspora, $6 billion a year minimum that we bring home every year. We will continue to do that till life's end. But if you take 1% of that money and you invest it in Kofi Kranting, this will be the last time you spend home your $6 billion, because we're going to change Ghana for good. Join us, right. KofiKranting.com, and thank you so much for listening to us. Thank you, Ibrahim, for the chance to speak to your audience.
Wow. Thank you very much for inspiring my audience. Thank you for stating your vision. And may God continue to bless you and guide you. And I urge people to listen to ideas, to listen to vision, and to not follow the traditional system whereby say, I belong to this, I belong to that. Let's craft and let's move Ghana to where we want to, not where it is. We can get there. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ibrahim. Stay well.